Welcome into the fan pregame. I nailed it. I think Kipper unplugged something for me. We're here live. Ailish, Justin, fan pregame. Getting you set for the next hour. We got lots of fun stuff on the network tonight, including the NBA draft lottery at 7 p.m. That's on Sportsnet 1. We will be praying for those Toronto Raptors to have ethically tanked themselves.
What the whole season was about, right?
This is it.
It all comes to roost tonight.
It does. Sportsnet. 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 1. If you're listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, after us at 7 o'clock, Blake Murphy will take over with the Raptors show. He'll be on there for a while. You can listen in live to his analysis of the NBA draft lottery. He'll be up there giving you all you need to know ahead of the first overall picks or who gets the lottery balls. We'll have Kristen Peek on at 6:30, who will help us go through some of the top prospects and who needs Cooper Flagg the most, besides the Raptors.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We get some finality on the season of the Toronto Raptors that no one, I think, really wants to remember. Cool behind the glass, by the way. The guys getting your mic on there. That was very...
Did you hear them?
It was very impressive, yeah.
Oh, I couldn't hear anything.
They did a great job. Anyway.
Thanks, guys. I'm on.
And, of course, two big games in the Stanley Cup playoffs as it rolls on. I think I got my eye on Vegas and Edmonton. Okay. Big opportunity for the Oilers to go up 3-1. After coughing it away a little bit in Game 3 with a chance to put the dagger in the Golden Knights.
Yeah, Jesse Granger of The Athletic will join us in about 10 minutes. He's covering Vegas, Edmonton up there. So we'll get kind of the pulse there. I felt bad for Leon Draisaitl when he put the puck in his own net.
Did you?
0.something seconds left. Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. That sucks.
It does.
Yeah.
Back-to-back winners, Game 3 and mm-hmm. or Game 2 and Game 3.
So, yeah, that's tough. That's a tough stat to have. We'll go through a little bit more with Jesse Granger at 6:10. In the meantime, as we mentioned, those two games will be up on Sportsnet. We've got Washington, Carolina, Game 4, 7 p.m. They have a 2-1 series lead, Carolina there. It's interesting to me, Ovi has no points in this series so far. He's got one shot on 11.5 minutes of power play time. Like, it hasn't been Ovi's series. Getting a little worried about them.
Yeah, I think Washington, if they are one note, the one note is not going to get it done against the Carolina Hurricanes. I think they have to prove they have more layers to their game. And it wasn't necessarily Ovechkin carrying them through the 82-game season. Of course, they were about more than just that. But without Ovechkin on the board, it feels like, yeah, they're kind of stretching to produce that offense against an elite defensive team like the Carolina Hurricanes. It hasn't been a thrill yet, that series. But maybe in Game 4, Washington gets back on the board, goes 2-2, and it gets interesting as it goes back to the other nation's capital.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't really want to see Carolina just walk away with it without too much of a fight. I think, how can you not think that Washington was one of the best stories this season with the Ovi chase, with them being so good, and Spencer Carberry getting something out of these guys? Like, I expected this. I actually think I picked Washington. So I'm looking forward to seeing them try to get back into the series tonight, and Ovi probably being the guy that's got to lead them to do that. We'll get into a little more hockey in a bit. A couple other things we want to go through, though. Big NBA discussion tonight, obviously with the NBA draft lottery, but with some news about where Giannis might want to go. Maybe he wants to leave Milwaukee.
Perhaps. It's, you know, probably the polite way of saying it, right? You get the Shams report probably filtered in from Giannis in a way that it's like, okay, let's get this going now. It's time to go to the next chapter of my career. Shams tweeting earlier today, two-time NBA MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo has not made any a firm decision, but for the first time in his career, which again, maybe a little bit questionable, he is open to whether or not the best fit is remaining in Milwaukee or playing elsewhere. League sources telling Shams and ESPN. Third consecutive first-round exit in the playoffs for the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a player... You know, 12 years into his career, it's like, okay, how much does Giannis have left? You know, he's an MVP finalist this season. He's been on the NBA first team for 7 straight years now, assuming he gets in this year. He's only 4 years removed from a title, averaged 30 points and 12 boards this past season. This is still a guy, despite being a little up there in terms of his NBA tenure and a big body that's supposed to break down. He hasn't really shown signs of it. And if we're talking trade, if we're talking about, you know, what's his market value and whether there are pitfalls associated with getting involved with Giannis, the max contract that he signed is only 3 years. Mm-hmm. And if you're an MVP candidate this year and you still have just 3 years, it's not like an 8-year term where it's mm-hmm. like, okay, what is he going to look like at age 37? This is pretty manageable. So I feel like teams are going to be lining up to get into the conversation for Giannis. And this nugget being thrown out there on draft night
makes, very fitting,
I think, tonight's festivities a little bit more interesting, because a team that has a chip in the chair in both the postseason and the NBA and draft night is the Oklahoma City Thunder, who have not been able to cruise through the playoffs like maybe some expected and could be needing an added element. I wonder if they're a team that can put together a bunch of futures capital to get Giannis, or Houston or another team gets involved here. You know, he's always been connected to New York, Brooklyn. It seems like there's unbelievable amounts of opportunity out there for Giannis, and maybe finally he's willing to explore it.
Yeah, I think OKC, I have some notes here for Kristen when we talked to her, but a big night for the Sixers, because if they, I mean, they were championship contenders. They fell out of it really early on. They ended up winning 24 games. But if their pick falls outside the top six, it goes to OKC, and we know how many first-round picks. They have first-round picks forever. They will be in the draft lottery forever, it feels like. So maybe there's a little potential there, and you mentioned, like, they haven't had the smoothest postseason to this point, but you still believe in your OKC Thunder. No, I think this is huge for Giannis. I felt like it wasn't as shocking because I felt like Giannis has teased that idea, but this is not teasing it. This is giving it to Shams. This is putting it on ESPN. This is saying, I'm actually open-minded about playing somewhere else. My best fit might not be Milwaukee, and three first-round exits in a row. Like, it doesn't feel fresh in Milwaukee anymore. It doesn't feel like a team where I can picture them at this point being one of the top contenders. So what if you're a Raptors fan? Like, what are you giving up for Giannis?
Anything.
Yeah, pretty
probably.
Much.
Like, the Raptors have a lot of talent on the roster. They have the pieces necessary, I assume, to get it done. I think Giannis will be able to call his shot, though, so he would have to want to go to Toronto.
He loves Toronto.
And there's always been a connection there.
He loves the connection with the Greek community.
But, you know, the Raptors, just like how he's had and been frustrated with three consecutive first-round exits in the playoffs, the Raptors, of course, have had zero success in those 3 years. So he would have to be very convinced on the pieces he'd be joining, and that also, you know, doesn't completely jive what would have to go out the door via trade. But I imagine the Raptors would have to be involved here. They'd have to be interested. This is the way that they get star players. It's through trade, although this one seems a little different because I feel like Giannis will have all the control. But just looking at the NBA landscape as we speak, like, the Western Conference, the Thunder are supposed to be this elite team, but they're struggling with Denver, who is a flawed team for sure. The same can be said about the Warriors and Timberwolves. Like, it doesn't feel like there's actually a great team in the Western Conference, or a team that's a shoe-in to win a title in the Western Conference. I think the Thunder are a great team, but they are not unfallible here, clearly, given that it's 2-2 with Denver going into Game 5 in OKC. But you look at the Eastern Conference, doesn't feel like there's an elite team there either, with Indiana Pacers maybe controlling their destiny here, certainly controlling their destiny in their second-round matchup, and maybe looking like they can knock off Boston. So this league has been about super teams before. And if Giannis goes somewhere that is set up to house him perfectly, you could vault right back. You could vault to the top of the standings, or at the top of the tiers in terms of who can win a title. I think this is an amazing opportunity for a fortunate team that can both attract him and figure out a way to remain really, really competitive from a roster standpoint after bringing him in.
It feels like nothing is impossible anymore in the NBA in terms of trades. We saw at this trade deadline, like, the most shocking moves I've probably really ever seen in covering this sport with you, at least on this show. So why not think that Giannis can pick and choose wherever he wants to go? And when you float it out now and there's a whole offseason ahead, like, I don't know if we want to put odds on it, but it feels like he's not going to be a Buck for too much longer.
No, I think this was the very Giannis, very polite way of saying this ends now.
Okay, we'll see. Raptors with the 7th highest odds to land the number one pick tonight, what we've all been talking about all season long. I mean, Cooper Flagg, clearly the guy that's going to go number one, but we watched a lot of NCAA March Madness, and Kristen will help us kind of tee up who that 2-5 slots are, and if the Raptors do fall up a little bit higher or rise a little bit higher, who might be someone that they're targeting. But this is an exciting night. I don't think they're doing it the way that the NHL draft lottery did the other night with the live unveiling and the math. I think they'll just go back to the way they usually do it.
Skipping the math is probably a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Jazz, Wizards, and Hornets all with the 14th, all with 14% chance at landing the top overall pick, which would be Cooper Flagg. We'll go into it a little bit more where he'll fit development-wise and NBA-wise around 6:30. Before we get Jesse Granger on from The Athletic, like, we could do fan postgame for a minute. Leafs last night were on the radio for Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're watching that game. Like, I wouldn't say that the vibes are elite right now in Toronto. That was a pretty disappointing performance from the Maple Leafs. So wondering your confidence ranking, this series being tied up 2-2, coming back to Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely diminished from a Toronto standpoint, not just because the Maple Leafs didn't play particularly well. Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, of course, the discourse is definitely beginning there. But just the fact that Florida played so brilliantly well, played like the team that we saw win the Stanley Cup last year, played like the team that went to the Stanley Cup final the year prior, look like if they can do that, if that is repeatable, what they did in game four, no one can touch them. And if that's the case, like, it doesn't really matter if Austin Matthews is struggling a little bit or they don't get the secondary scoring on occasion because Florida can just do what Florida does. Now, they've only done that once in this series, so maybe it isn't all that repeatable, but their fastball may still be unhittable.
I'm going to say my positive spin is that it's a best of three, and you've got home ice advantage if it'll leave. So better use that opportunity that you earned.
Those are true statements.
Wisely. They'll be back in action Wednesday night, so both teams getting an extra day of rest. Wednesday, Friday will be the next two games for Leafs, Panthers. Let's shift over to some NHL action. We've got a doubleheader on Sportsnet tonight, and the late game will be Vegas and Edmonton. Edmonton with the 2-1 series lead. Let's chat with Jesse Granger of The Athletic. Jesse, we appreciate you coming on. How's the series been? Pretty fun? Pretty chaotic?
Yeah, it's great as long as you're not having to write on deadline right as the buzzer. The Edmonton Oilers are making it entertaining for us in these third periods. It's been some great hockey.
Yeah, you just pay attention to what's happened on the ice because what you write may not, in fact, be usable at all given their penchant for late-game comebacks. From a Vegas standpoint, Jesse, what's like the primary takeaway from you after nine games? There was a lot of expectation, I think, on the outside about what this team could accomplish, how close they are to the team that won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago. Is there something that's revealed itself through the first handful of games here for Vegas on another cup run?
Yeah, I think the main takeaway is this team still, to me, hasn't played a great game, and yet they're still finding ways to win. They're still finding ways to get through these series, and obviously a big win the other night without playing their A game. And I think that they got better as that Minnesota series went on in the first round. They have gotten better as this series has gone on, so that's obviously a good sign. But game one wasn't their best. I thought they were a lot better in game two. They probably deserved more than that overtime loss they had down in Vegas. And then obviously they were the better team up here in game three and just barely got the win. But I just think this team is building its game. The power play has translated to the playoffs. This is a team that hadn't had a good power play for 6-7 years, and they were excellent this year. There were some wonders like, okay, does that translate to playoff hockey? The power play has come up big for them in the playoffs. So yeah, I think this is a really good team that's still trying to find its game, at least its peak game here in the playoffs, but so far they've been good enough to get through.
Yeah, a lot of attention on the health of Mark Stone, of course, the game time decision. I saw he was skating, but I wonder if you have any latest on if he'll be able to play four points in three games for the Oilers, obviously kind of heart and soul of this Vegas Golden Knights team.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he doesn't play tonight. Coach Bruce Cassidy, after the morning skate, he called him a game time decision, but the fact that Stone was on the ice practicing in his normal spot, he was a full participant, he worked with the top power play unit, looked like he was himself out there. Obviously, he's not 100% healthy, but who is this time of year? So I would expect him to play. And like you said, he's a big part of this team. Obviously, the emotional leader being the captain. But against such a high-octane offense like Edmonton, it's so important to have your best defensive players out there. And Mark Stone's one of those. And I also think that the Golden Knights are one of the best teams in the NHL at scoring on the rush. And to me, with how well these teams are playing in zone, you're seeing almost no offense being generated from sustained zone time. All of the goals in this series both ways are in transition. And while Mark Stone isn't the fastest guy, you might not think of him as like a transition scorer. He's the guy that fuels the transition game by creating takeaways in the neutral zone around the defensive blue line. If he can create some giveaways, start going the other way, get Jack Eichel going. He's on that top line with Ivan Barbashev. To me, that's the easiest route for Vegas to get some offense. So huge part of the team. And like I said, I'd be shocked if he doesn't play tonight.
The hand-wringing in this market, Jesse, has begun with the goal scoring drying up for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. I wonder, it's probably not to the same extent because Vegas is in a decent position and Jack Eichel has dotted up the score sheet a little bit, but just one goal, 9 assists in as many games. So 10 points so far, but the on-ice goal differential at even strength six goals for, 13 against. How are you viewing Eichel's playoffs so far?
Yeah, kind of like what I was saying earlier about the whole team in general, and that's not a surprise. This team goes how Jack Eichel goes, and he hasn't been at his best offensively. I think he does need to shoot more. He has passed up some shooting opportunities. He's always a pass-first guy, so that's nothing new. He likes to be a playmaker. He's constantly looking to set guys up rather than looking to shoot himself. But I do think that Vegas needs him to shoot a little more. They do need him to score a little more. He's been great defensively, though. He's matched up with Connor McDavid constantly in this series. He was the number one matchup against him, even here in Edmonton, when Chris Knobloch had the last change. And he's done a great job at that. I mean, Connor McDavid's going to make some plays because he's the best player in the world. But I think Eichel's done a good job against him defensively. He's been great on the penalty kill. So overall, his game is good, but I do think that Vegas is going to need him to score some more goals and take some more shots if they're going to play at their best.
We're chatting with Jesse Granger of The Athletic ahead of Game 4. We got Vegas Edmonton on the network a little later on tonight in our doubleheader at 9 p.m. puck drop. You wrote a great article about Riley Smith, and just what have you learned about his belonging with the Vegas Golden Knights and what this series means for him to be wearing? I guess it's, what is it, the golden silver? How do they term, like, what's the correct term?
Jesse, you know more than me.
Gray, like, kind of, you know, those colors.
Yeah, he loves it in Vegas. He loves this team. He's obviously got some great relationships with players on this team, William Karlsson being number one, that were built over that expansion draft era and going on that miracle run in 2018. And he's been such a big part of this franchise. He's fourth all time in games played. He's fourth all time in goals. He's right up there amongst the leaders in points in franchise history. And he was a huge part of that cup run when they won in 2023. He obviously gets traded a couple weeks after winning that Stanley Cup, and that's a shock to the system. And he wasn't at his best in his time in Pittsburgh. And then he gets traded to the Rangers. And I don't think he was a bad player for those teams, but he wasn't as good as he can be. And the scoring production was down. And then he gets traded back to Vegas, and you could see the smile on his face the day that they welcomed him back to Vegas after that trade. He was pumped to be here. He's obviously fit in really well. The offense hasn't really flowed for him since he came over, but he's such a reliable player, and he's got such good chemistry with William Karlsson, and no better example than that last play the other night where he jumps off the bench. He said he looked up at the clock as he was jumping off the bench, and there's only 7 seconds left. He knew he had to get down the ice quick. He's seen William Karlsson make that play 100 times where he kind of beats the forecheck or the defenseman to the corner and just kind of spins and throws the puck in front. He knew exactly where it was going. Those two kind of have something on the ice that you don't see very often. They always know where each other are, and obviously he makes that great play with a lot of poise to deke around the blocking defenseman and Stuart Skinner and end up scoring that goal with 0.4 seconds left. He looks like a different player when he plays with Vegas, and that doesn't just go for this time around. I mean, when the Florida Panthers, when the expansion draft came along, the Panthers were more than happy to trade Riley Smith to Vegas. They were trying to get rid of that contract, and then he comes to Vegas, and he's one of their better players. There's just something about the way he works with this team. He loves Las Vegas. He's really connected. He started a charity softball game in that city that's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for charity. It's just something about this team in this city gets the best out of Riley Smith, and they've needed it so far in these playoffs. So great for both sides.
Yeah, and it seems he's helped William Karlsson. He didn't have a great regular season. It was obviously mired by some absent time there, but William Karlsson has certainly been a big part of the story for Vegas. Some synergy between two original misfits, it seems. San Jose was the rivalry, but San Jose's fallen on tough times for Vegas. Is Edmonton like the number one rival now for the Vegas Golden Knights?
I think so. It's there's certainly not the animosity that there was with the Sharks back in the day, but to me, it's more of a respectful rivalry in terms of we know that that's the best team in the Pacific. Both teams, they realize we're going to have to go through the other team in order to get what we want at the end of the season, which is the Stanley Cup. And it's only the second time they've played in the playoffs, but every time they meet in the regular season, it always feels like there are undertones of this is who we're going to end up having to go through. So you get battles between these teams. And I was just talking about it today. It's interesting because the last time these teams played 2 years ago, there was a lot of animosity. There was a lot of fights. There were tons of roughing majors thrown out and guys tossed from games. Alex Petrangelo got suspended for slashing Dreisaitl. Darnell Nurse got suspended that same game for instigating a fight. There was a lot of extracurriculars, and we haven't seen that at all in this series. And to me, the difference is these games are so close. Last time, the series was close, but the games themselves were blowouts, and you were able to kind of use your physicality, maybe start some other stuff after the whistle. These games so far have all been come down to the wire, and you can't afford to throw your body around or do something after a whistle and cost your team, because it's coming down to a one-goal game basically every night. So I think that the fact that these teams are so closely matched and these games have been so close has kind of taken that aspect out of it, and we're not seeing the vitriol on the ice that we did 2 years ago.
How much has the Pickard Skinner carousel been kind of like the narrative of this entire series, and how difficult might it be, or maybe not, for Vegas to be game planning when one guy's in, one guy's out, one guy's hurt, one guy's now back in? Like, it's just a bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah, I mean, it is. They are very different stylistically in terms of the way they play. Stuart Skinner is a big blocking goalie who doesn't really play too far out. He kind of plays deep in his net. He uses his body to cut off angles and not give shooting lanes, and he's not a real athletic guy. And then you've got Calvin Pickard, who's all over the place, but he's a battler. And he fights for every puck, and he finds ways to make saves he probably shouldn't. And it's super interesting to me that one of these goalies has not lost a game in the playoffs and the other has not won a game. And yet when I watch them play, I don't feel like that gap doesn't match in terms of how well they play. I just think the Edmonton Oilers, I think Calvin Pickard has made a couple saves here and there. And I think the Oilers have just played better with him in net for whatever reason. So obviously it hurts losing him to injury for the Oilers. They'd prefer to have him in considering they're 6-0 with him back there. But I don't think it's a major drop off to Stuart Skinner. He wasn't good enough the other night. He needs to be better if they're going to get the win. But I think he's certainly capable. Obviously, he just took them to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final a year ago.
All right, Jesse, we got to let you go, but we appreciate you coming on ahead of tonight's game. Enjoy the rest of the series, and I hope it's a long one.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Should be fun.
Thanks so much. That's Jesse Granger at The Athletic. Some great articles up on this Vegas Oilers series, and also kind of some deep dives on some of the goaltending stories in the postseason, including one on Logan Thompson, how he said he's perhaps the best goalie in the postseason. Quietly, yes. Freddie Anderson still standing tall when he's in there. Like, it
Brock
has
University,
been,
baby.
It has been, there you go. It has been an interesting, like, almost every series had some sort of goalie discussion, you know? Like, it's the goalies are taking over Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, but it's loudest in Edmonton.
Oh,
like,
it
they,
is.
They need, like, it is head home, and it's an opportunity to go up 3-1. So, like, it's a real, mm-hmm. real stakes here for Edmonton. But just getting a win for Stuart Skinner would be a win unto itself. But you can't do that without, you know, the other things. Like, so you got to be greedy a little bit. Like, it just feels like they need the Stuart Skinner victory, because the fact that Calvin Pickard is going to likely miss some more time here, and the confidence was there, and the confidence doesn't seem to be there in Stuart Skinner. It seems like he's giving up a goal that he should not give up. And the way that the Oilers play, where, like, you need those saves because they're going to leave some openings just by the way that they, you know, attack games. They just need a really quality performance from Stuart Skinner to put themselves in a position to not only end the run for Skinner, but yeah, put a real potential, you know, knockout blow on a Vegas team that is unbelievably dangerous. If they go back 2-2 to Vegas, it's going to be really disappointing for Edmonton, given the position they put themselves in after two games in Vegas.
Yeah, latest reports on Pickard's injury is, like, at least a week until he's back, and you could have a series over.
Yeah, and Skinner's got to get them through this game, this series, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that confidence will go a long way. See how it goes tonight. A 9 p.m. start. Got that one part of a doubleheader. Washington, Carolina will be first up on the network. A 7 p.m. puck drop there. As we mentioned, Carolina and Edmonton both have 2-1 series leads going into tonight. So we might see some elimination games around the corner where we're tying things back up. Leafs and Panthers style.
Are you excited for the final time to hit the NBA Tankathon?
Yes.
When will you be doing that? Right before the end of the show?
I will be hitting the NBA Tankathon one last time on our show. You know, a couple times the Raptors came up first on my laptop. We'll
and you
see.
You continued to tempt fate after that, which was interesting.
Tonight will be the final night.
Okay.
And then the real lottery will be selected. So we will take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with Kristen Peek and go through the NBA draft lottery tonight.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Just a reminder, if you're looking for the NBA Draft Lottery, it'll be up on Sportsnet 1 at 7 p.m. You can also listen to Blake Murphy and the Raptors show, kind of a hybrid Raptors show. He'll be taking you through the NBA Draft Lottery for a little while on the radio, reacting to hopefully the Raptors getting first overall selection. That would be fun.
What makes it a hybrid Raptors show?
Well, because he's not just going full Raptors. He's going to listen into the draft. He's going to probably give analysis on all of these young prospects who may not play for the Raptors.
Some surprise Blake Murphy is, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good. He's going to be dialed. Yeah. It's his Super Bowl, his NBA championship tonight. Okay, let's go into a little more chat with our big night on the network, NBA Draft Lottery. 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 1. Let's bring in Kristen Peek, color analyst for NBA Future starts now, and Hoops HQ senior contributor. Kristen, we appreciate you coming on. I know it's a busy night. What's the vibe like ahead of the NBA Draft Lottery?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm here in Chicago. Tonight's the lottery, a.k.a. the Cooper Flag sweepstakes. And, you know, the vibe, it's crazy. It's not as buzzy as it was for the Victor draft, where, you know, there was it's a generational type talent that you're trying to get, but it's definitely, I would say, about 10 steps up than what the vibe was last year when nobody really knew, or, you know, you didn't know what you were getting in the number one pick. So there is a little bit of, like, I talked to Danny Ainge from the Jazz, and they're very nervous. Obviously, you know, other teams like Washington Wizards and Charlotte Hornets, Brooklyn Nets. So there's a lot here. And what the best part is, if you swing and miss on Cooper, you got about three or four other guys, you know, that are excellent consolation prizes.
I definitely want to get into who you think is like the 2-5 slot, but let's pause on Cooper Flagg. He deserves it. Wizards, Jazz, and Hornets, all with a 14% chance at landing Cooper Flagg. Now, like, where would you say his best fit is development-wise, best fit for him to start his young NBA career out of those three teams who have the same chance at landing him for first overall?
For those three, I mean, I hate to say it and be the cliche, but the Utah Jazz and what they're building there, Danny Ainge was credited for the rebuild in in Boston and bringing a championship caliber program there. So they've got some really good young pieces. They're letting their young core figure it out with Keontae George kind of at the helm there. Isaiah Collier got a lot of good minutes this year. Also, Taylor Hendricks. So they're just letting their young guys play and figure it out. I don't think it's going to be as quick as what we saw the Oklahoma City Thunder kind of skyrocket in about three seasons and become one of the best teams in the West. But adding Cooper Flagg would definitely help with that. Regards, and then, you know, next year's draft, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, is super stacked as well. And so they're happy to be in that rebuild program and rebuild mode. And I hate to say cliche, but I think that would be a good spot for Coop in those three sort of scenarios. And then, you know, outside the chance, whether it's Brooklyn, even the Spurs, how are they still have a chance there with, you know, with Wimby and everything. It's going to be an interesting night.
Okay. So that's potentially the best spot for him to get the best of his young career. But, you know, the NBA might want to put him on more marquee events or more marquee opportunities to showcase his superstar. If the NBA had its choice or its druthers, no frozen envelope here, but what would be the best spot for the NBA to use Cooper Flagg in its marketing machine?
I mean, come on. It would be the Spurs. Can you imagine Cooper Flagg running the break with Victor Wembanyama and De'Aaron Fox throwing lobs? Like, that's it. It's not fair. It's not fair. Two young superstars, one, you know, that is going to be the face of the NBA once, you know, LeBron, Kevin Durant, everyone leave, and Wimby, he's the next young superstar, along with, I think, Anthony Edwards. But when you look at what Cooper did at the Team USA select camp before they went over and won a gold medal in the Olympics, and how he didn't back down from any competition. And I remember asking him, were you nervous? And he just said, of course I was, you know, but once you step in between those lines, it becomes basketball and you just kind of settle into your game. So yeah, if And by the way, I have been in that room. It's very, very intense when the ping pong balls are chosen. There's no way it's rigged for all of you, you know, rig believers out there. It's very, very intense, and just the way that the whole thing is operated, you know, with the different combinations and how they fall and how just one number off can completely change it for a team. So, yeah, I guess that would be my other, you know, answer. I would love to see him play with Wimby.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would love that.
That feels like the basketball karma result too. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if basketball gods are in play with the ping pong balls, et cetera, but like there's a lot of talk about tanking this year. The Raptors, of course,
yes,
front of mind in terms of tanking and how ethical it really was. I don't know. San Antonio feels like a team that it wouldn't be bogged down by the karmic forces at play.
Right.
I want to ask you just one more about Cooper Flagg, because I know you follow these young prospects pretty closely. And, you know, being the number one draft pick, especially a guy that's been solidified as the number one guy, he's not the Wemby hype, as you mentioned, but he's certainly going first overall. Like, how do you think his like mental side of the game is ready to handle the pressures, the excitement, the highs and lows of being a guy with so much on his shoulders in such a young spot in his career and in the potential to go on and do great things?
Well, what's great about Cooper is he has a great family beside him. I've gotten to know Kelly and Ralph, his parents, very well the last few years that I've covered him as a high school prospect, mm-hmm, and when he was at Duke. And, you know, he went to Duke and he wanted that challenge. He wanted that spotlight. And I wrote a story about this, and he didn't start off the season that well. Like, he wasn't the same Cooper that we knew as the number one high school player coming out. And it was a reset, a mental reset over Christmas break, where he just got back in the gym with his dad. He got in the gym with his long-term trainer, Matt McKenzie. And it was a mental reset, but it was also just getting back to the basics and playing the way he knows how to play. So I think going through those hurdles, those challenges, playing on the biggest stage in the Final Four, obviously coming up short, is really that what prepared him on the basketball side. And off the court, I mean, he already has significant endorsement deals with NIL, whether that's New Balance, Gatorade, AT&T, that commercial, that fantastic commercial with his actual grandma Evelyn in the bingo hall. So I think his adjustment is going to be great, and he's just going to hit the ground running.
Kristen, who's your favorite non-flag prospect in the draft?
Oh, what a great question. Dylan Harper at number two, he's fantastic. We talk about consolation prizes. He obviously has the NBA blueprint. His older brother, Ron Harper Jr., had a bit of success in the NBA, and he is just, you know, a 6'6 guard. He says he watches a lot of Kate Cunningham and also Scottie Barnes, believe it or not, just those big guards that can be able to play make. And then, you know, in terms of personality, I love VJ Edgecombe, the Baylor guard, who is another projected top five player. Just someone, he's from the Bahamas, was one of the biggest risers in high school basketball. He went from ranked inside the top 80 to a top 10 five-star McDonald's All-American. And the funniest story he ever told me is he was playing for Long Island Lutheran in New York. And I said, "You're from the Bahamas." I was like, "How did you get to Long Island?" And he's like, "Well, I just wanted better basketball." And he said, "But, you know, I got here and I didn't have a winter coat and I had never seen snow before. So, you know, the winter, that was a big shock for me." Mm. I was like, "Yeah, I'm sure it was."
I feel like a lot of people that come to Toronto are also shocked by that, you know, among other things, customs and duties and all that. I'm sure you'll get lots of great stories tonight. When you look at the prospects that aren't Cooper Flagg and maybe that 2-5 area, I'm always curious if it's like a clear ranking for you or if it's a bit more needs based, depending on who lands which pick. Like, do you see it having some flexibility, or has it been pretty much painted out to you for who the top, say, 1-5 are?
I would say it's Cooper, and then Dylan has pretty much solidified himself as the number two. 3 and 4, you can kind of flip-flop between VJ Edgecombe and Ace Bailey, the 6'8", you know, wing out of Rutgers who played with Dylan Harper this year. And 5 is where it really starts to be kind of like a toss-up. You hear the name Jeremiah Sears, the point guard out of Oklahoma, who's creeping into that conversation. He's got comps to Trae Young. And then you also hear Con Knipple, who was Cooper Flagg's sharp shooting teammate at Duke. And so five is really where it starts to kind of like, you know, differentiate. We talk about tiers in the lottery, and you talk to NBA teams and scouts, and they say, okay, one through four is top tier. Mm. And then five through nine is another type of tier. And then from there on, you know, it just kind of becomes more about what your team need is and how they fit in the locker room as opposed to best available prospect.
I'm glad you mentioned number five, because I think it's the Sixers with the fifth best odds, and they have a really interesting night. Like, I mean, they were supposed to be championship contenders. They ended up only winning like 24 games and tanked it up. Like, if their pick falls outside the top six, it goes to OKC. How big of a night is it for the Sixers tonight to get a little luck?
Yeah, that would be great. I just ran into Jared McCain and his brother. He's going to be on the stage here. So he's hoping to bring a little bit of Sixer luck to the organization. And, you know, for someone like Jared to have the start of the season that he did alongside Tyrese Maxey, by the way, like the smiliest backcourt in all NBA. Like, I love those two. They're the best. But, yeah, and just to kind of be patient with the process, I said, well, how's it going? He said, I'm in L.A. I'm rehabbing, just gearing up for the season. But I'm excited for the draft lottery. I'm excited, you know, to see where we fall and what kind of piece that we can add to our team. So I think it would be huge for them to kind of, you know, fall into a little bit of luck tonight.
Kristen, how has the news of the day that Giannis may want out of Milwaukee painted tonight's festivities?
Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Are we surprised? Like, this – I feel like these little Shams Charania little nuggets happen around this time every draft year or so. And, you know, what Giannis has done for the team and the city in Milwaukee, I know it's very substantial. I know he's happy there. Like, him and his wife have really built out, you know, a great little role. But then it turns to, like, well, what more can I do here? Like, I've already won a championship. Like, can I go someplace else? Can I team up with somebody else? Everybody seems to be teaming up with everyone else. So, I think he should be looking at other options.
Yeah, it doesn't have to happen in haste here, clearly, but Ailish mentioned OKC potentially getting a pick if it falls out of the top six. Brooklyn would be potentially interested in Giannis. Like, we could see one of these prospects or one of these potential draft slots used in a Giannis negotiation moving forward. Do you have I know it's not a draft question per se, but like, is there somewhere that makes too much sense in your eyes for Giannis?
Let's look at it. I mean, Sean Marks was a genius last year because it was one of the weakest drafts in the last 20 years. And he was the only team, the Brooklyn Nets were the only team that said, we don't want to pick, period. We don't in either round. They were the only team that didn't have a draft pick. And what do? They imploded and they are gathering draft picks. So they have four first round picks. And that allows a lot of wiggle room. So if there is, and it's a bigger market, right? And so I could see that being a potential. You know, you bring in a superstar name and then you just kind of build around it. They have D'Angelo Russell there. They have Cam Thomas. So I'm sure that would be appealing. But again, like, Giannis has four young kids. I don't know if a big city is what they're into or if they want a smaller, like, still a big market, but in a smaller, not New York City.
How about Toronto?
Yeah, Toronto. That'd be great, yeah.
Okay, good. You put some good words in for us there.
Big-ish city?
Yeah, it's big-ish. Smaller market, though. You know, the good Greek community. Every time he comes here, he gets a lot of fans. So maybe he'll remember that when he's looking around. So we talked about the Raptors just briefly. They've got seventh best odds at, you know, landing Cooper Flagg. And let's say that doesn't happen. What should they be looking for around there? Like, is there someone that you like to fall into the Raptors' lap if the best case scenario for them when you look at tonight's draft lottery?
Well, the good news is that there's a lot of different options, right? Like, if you want a floor general who can manipulate the pick and roll, Jeremiah Fears is your guy. If he falls outside, if he's in the 5-7 range, great. If you want some size, Derek Queen, who is Liam McNeely and also Cooper Flagg, teammate at Mount Verde Academy. He was incredible for Maryland this year. He lost 26 pounds, measured very well today at the combine. A true 6'9 and a half, 6'10 forward was, I think, the Big Ten freshman of the year. So he's someone else if you want some interior size and presence. And, you know, if you want a sharpshooter like Konta Nipple, like, he's got the hot hand. He's, again, comes from another basketball family. I think his dad played and coached him his whole life. He's got four younger brothers. His mom literally birthed a starting five. All five of them play basketball at a very, very high level. So if you're looking at that one and done talent, I mean, there are a lot of rebuild options. And if you want, you know, a little bit more, come in and play right away. I am super high on Neat Clifford from Colorado State, 4-year player, 6'6", triple double threat almost every night. So he's someone that is going to be able to contribute to any NBA team right away, and someone that I think will start to see rise, you know, as we get closer to the draft.
Okay, well, I know you said it's very official and there's no, you know, funny business, but if you can put a little extra luck in for the Raptors, we'd really appreciate
it
tonight.
I got you guys.
Just like a little prayer, do something just for us because we need it, all right? Kristen, we appreciate you coming on. I know tonight's a busy night. Enjoy it. And hopefully we get to chat soon. We'll be looking at your breakdowns as the draft lottery kicks off tonight.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much. That's Kristen Peek, color analyst for NBA Future, starts now in Hoops Headquarters Senior Contributor HQ.
So pretty easy at the top, Cooper Flagg, right? As Kristen mentioned, Dylan Harper expected to go second. Maybe it's VJ Edgecombe after that in terms of, like, consensus. But the Raptors expected to be, you know, if not seven, in that range. And it feels like it's another opportunity for Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster to put their interpretation on things, right? I don't think you can just be like, okay, seventh up in the consensus mocks, that's going to be the next Toronto Raptor. They don't really work that way. Of course, with Scotty Barnes, that was bucking expectation to a certain extent as well. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to have – I don't think we're going to know who the next Raptor is tonight, that's for sure, unless they do win the draft
lottery. Unless they get first.
Or maybe move up to second, I suppose. But
wouldn't that be fun?
I guess we'll find out tonight exactly, but it just feels like the Raptors will find a way to surprise us. Whether that's with Cooper Flagg or not, we shall see. But, yeah, an important pick for the Toronto Raptors at this point.
So is it time for my final tankathon?
No better time, I don't think.
Okay, so as a reminder, Raptors have the 7th best odds to land the number one pick. We've been doing this tankathon on Sportsnet 590 Fam whenever we had Raptors games or here on Sportsnet for our pregame show.
It was like a coping measure, I think.
It was. When things were going poorly, we would do this. And sometimes it would bring a lot of positivity. So for the last time, I'm going to do it. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. But it's exciting. Okay, Brooklyn picks first.
Why is that exciting?
Because the Raptors move up 5 spots and they pick second.
Okay, that's pretty good.
That would be amazing.
They would
move up 5 spots and pick second.
Come on down, Dylan Harper.
Unless
Masai Ujiri looks at it completely different than
my final draft simulator was Brooklyn, Toronto, Utah, Charlotte, Washington, New Orleans, Philadelphia, which would go to OKC, San Antonio, Phoenix, which would go to Houston and Portland. I mean, I'm really happy with that.
With all due respect to, you know, Ryan Smith and Utah Mammoth and all the exciting things happening there, kind of want to see Cooper Flagg play in a market like Brooklyn, if not Toronto.
That would be pretty fun.
Just, I mean, I'd be a little bit more accessible.
I think that's a pretty awesome sim lottery.
Okay. You'll take that?
Let's take it. I won't tempt fate to press it one more time.
I'm going to be greedy and want Cooper Flagg, but...
let me see how many times I have to press it.
No.
I don't have any control. But, like, just, you know, if I press it again and Toronto moves up to one...
You're throwing it away. Exactly. You're throwing it away.
Oh, they went to one. They went to one. They went 2, 3, and 1. Tonight is the night, folks. 2, 3, and 1. I'm happy with the average of that being 2. So... How about that?
I guess we finish where we started.
Speaking of, my best bet for tonight is going to be the Raptors to get the first overall pick in the NBA draft lottery. It's 10-1. We just saw some crazy...
The old simple math equation. No, I don't think it
looks
fondly on this, does it?
But you know what?
10-1. What is it? 7.5% to win?
Hey,
someone smarter than me can figure out if that's a positive.
And I'd like to remind people 6 years ago on this day was the shot.
Yep.
And the Kawhi shot. And so good things happen on May 12th. And for the Raptors, this could be a really great thing to happen for them. And I was at that game with the Kawhi shot, and I'll never forget the moment. Like,
look at you. I didn't know you were there.
Yeah. Bought tickets like last minute. I was like, I'm going to this game. Didn't know I was in for something so special. And I had great like baseline like view of the shot going in. I mean, it was in, like the 300s, but it doesn't matter. Still had like almost like a bird's eye view of it. And I'll never forget the quiet as the ball bounced bounced and then went in, and then it was like deafening. It was awesome. So I'm going to channel that energy in tonight, Raptors first overall pick.
I had a super lag in my condo at the time, and I heard everyone screaming about 12 seconds before it actually the play even started. I kind of knew.
But at least you knew to pay attention.
Yeah, I certainly knew to pay
attention. That's my best bet for tonight. We just did the sim lottery. The average was second best overall.
Which will not cash that 10-1 pick. But
so Oilers and my second best bet of the night is the Oilers to win and Draisaitl to score. I felt terribly watching Draisaitl put the puck in his own net with less than a second on the clock. I think he will be very motivated. I think the Oilers will be very motivated. So that parlay is only plus 200. But there's motivation station tonight.
Oiler games have featured a lot of goals so far in these playoffs. 8.11 goals per game so far. With Stuart Skinner in net, that goes to 8 2/3 goals per game. So I'm going to play the over ladders. Over 7.5 plus 155. Over 8.5 plus 240.
Big time.
Stuart Skinner in net. Checkbox one. Oilers desperate to get a win at home here. Make it 3-1. I think the offense will be flying tonight. So I expect a high-scoring affair. Draisaitl probably scores. Maybe the Oilers win. Everyone cashes.
Okay. That'd be great. And the Raptors get first overall pick. And then we're really cashing in. Quick updates on PWHL playoff picture. Maybe we'll go through Conn Smythe as well for the NHL. But craziest game I've ever seen in women's hockey was Victoire last night.
The craziest game?
It went to 4 overtimes to tie
the Olympic
series.
Final.
Okay, well, PWHL post? History. How about that?
MPP?
Craziest PWHL game in their 2-year history was Victoire winning in 4 overtimes last night to tie the series up 1-1. They'll play again tomorrow night. The Scepters, our Toronto Scepters, are a little down bad right now.
How much trouble are the Scepters in? Be honest.
They're in some trouble. They're down 2-1 to the Frost. They play Wednesday
What's
night.
What's with the Frost?
The Frost are defending champs. They got
that
magic.
They just turn it up.
They turn it up. They're a playoff team. They're built different. They're defending champs. So I was a little disheartened watching the Scepters on Friday night. I was there at live. I was doing my Rogers Ignite streaming of the Maple Leafs game, and both teams lost, and it was very bad vibes leaving, driving home. Everybody was very sad. At Coca-Cola Coliseum. But you know what? I'll just quickly say, Rogers Ignite, I saw, this is not a company girl, but
sounds like it.
I saw so many people streaming the Leafs game while at the Scepters game, and I was just like, it's my company.
You got to multitask.
It was great. You know, it was actually, you know, there's too many people streaming where it was like someone else would be ahead of you, and, you know, I kind of saw that someone scored, but we were all working on it.
Me and my condo with the Kawhi.
Yeah, we were all working on it. So, you know, the app's working well, team.
Set aside the Conn Smythe for a second. The MVP of the playoffs and the P-Dub, I feel like we should be not close to figuring this out, but if the Frost are in control of their series and Victoire, you know, neck and neck here with the Charge, is there someone that's emerged?
Yeah, I mean, I looked this up before we came on the air just for value stakes story, but I would say right now, Lise Dechlin leads the whole postseason in points and in goals, tied for goals. She's got 6 points, 3 goals with Michaela Cabo, who's also on her team. These are two Minnesota Frost players.
Are they both top line forwards for them?
Dechlin's a D.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting to keep an eye on.
Runs the power play?
She's out there all the time, logs crazy minutes. Dechlin's 35-1 to win it's the Alana Kloss MVP award. Mm-hmm. And Cava is 21-1. But I watched that Victoire game, and Anne-Renee Debien was insane. She had 87 shots, basically, so far in 2 games, 87 saves so far, So she's got a 1.45 goals against and a 9.46 save percentage. So if you think the Victoire are going to win, it's either going to be on the backs of Anne Renee or Laura or Marie. Like, it's one of those three. And I just thought it was pretty shocking to see her stand on her head and be able to keep the puck out of the net. So, Debien, possibly.
So, unclear with the Victoire, but if you like the Frost, dabble on both Dechlin and Cava.
Yeah.
Maybe we got the winner there?
Yeah, I think so, at this point.
Okay.
Lots can change, but Cava was robbed last year of MVP. Robbed with an asterisk, like she deserved it, but they also gave it to Taylor Heisey, so maybe this is her year.
Yeah, maybe there's some regret in that decision-making amongst the panel that chooses that award.
I don't know. It's the writers and such.
Yeah, a little panel.
Yeah, a little value on Lise Dechlin.
Okay, I'll look into that.
35-1.
What are the Panthers going to do? Are they going to not? Like, if the Panthers go get past the Leafs, win the Stanley Cup, are they going to not have a Conn Smythe Trophy winner again? I don't know who should win for
them. It might go to whoever's on the other side.
Back-to-back, McDavid?
Is that what you're betting?
No.
No.
Not
the
in a
odds
loss.
Are short.
Not in a loss to the Florida Panthers, that's for sure.
All right, two games on the network tonight. That starts up next. Washington, Carolina, NBA Draft Lottery also next on Sportsnet 1. Have a great night, everyone.
Go Raptors.
Yeah, woo!